back from their summer vacations.
Okay, good.
And ready to get back to work. I know we're going to have trouble with Senator Peterson, who's already spending all of that billion-dollar surplus. Is that correct?
You've got sending it back.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess I got that mixed up. So we'll have discussions on that some other day. But obviously, this morning's meeting is with an urgency relative to the propane gas shortage. Senator Saxog, I should mention, I think we have a quorum present. House File 2374, and I know there might be one or two amendments, but if you want to present the bill or whatever you might like to do.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today we're presenting Senate File 2374. As you know, we've had kind of an unrelenting winter, and it appears that we've got at least a couple of weeks of sub-zero left. Due to those consistently low temperatures, record-setting temperatures, I might add, we've experienced a jump in propane use, the price of propane, as well as eligibility for propane energy assistance. So this bill appropriates money from the general fund to the Commissioner of Commerce to provide emergency heating assistance through the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, also known as LIHEAP. Is that the correct? The funding is meant to supplement existing federal funding, not to replace it. And with me today is Commissioner Mike Rothman, Department of Commerce, to give a few comments.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for taking the consideration of the bill on an urgency basis and considering everything that needs to be done on this matter. So I felt that maybe perhaps what I could start with a few comments, give you some background on the supply of propane, the pricing of propane, why the what the impact has been on the low-income heating assistance program, and the action steps that the governor and the administration has taken in response to the propane crisis. We've taken an all-hands-on-deck approach. With you in the materials is a three-page document that outlines chronologically the steps that the governor and the administration have taken in response to the propane situation. It started in November. As many of you know, there was a difficult situation with the propane supply that started with the harvest, the late harvest, and the need to dry on the agricultural side. We didn't learn until a little bit later that let me say it this way. People have asked me, what caused the propane crisis? What is the underlying fundamental issue here? And there are a number of things at play, or what has happened, at least reported by industry and the information that we have. The first thing that came on the scene was the late harvest and the spike in demand in the agriculture sector. We also knew that, or found out when the governor met with the propane industry in December, that the Kinder Morgan Company was planning to reverse the flow of the Cochin pipeline coming down from Canada and needed to do maintenance. So they put the pipeline on maintenance in December, which caused us some heartburn, and we asked them to mitigate that so it would not impact Minnesota households. The next thing that happened, as everybody knows, is the winter snap cold went crazy cold. We had the polar vortex and sub-zero weather even today, and it's continuing on. As we did all this, we also learned that fundamentally the one of the original causes of the problem was the fact that the propane industry was exporting propane to other countries. Exports had increased from 5% to 20%. So because all of the propane supply was directed out of the country and not into the Midwest and the upper Midwest, the high demand throughout, you know, the United States and the Northeast, we rapidly found ourselves in one of the worst situations with supply in many, many years. Currently, the supply of propane is still at 60% of the five-year average. So we're not out of the woods yet, and the propane industry is saying it's touch and go through March in terms of supply. What happened then was in the marketplace, it's an unregulated industry. The price spiked in the middle of January. As many of you know and have heard the stories, the prices went up to about $6.67 as reported to us in a couple places in Minnesota. The high on average was at about $4.67, which is typically twice. So the price, just as a baseline for understanding, is that the average price of a gallon of propane in October would have been $1.67 or $1.60. So prices tripled and created a huge problem for the agriculture folks and especially impacting the households in Minnesota. In response to that, the governor took some actions. As you know, he declared a peacetime emergency. We took action with the low-income heating assistance program, and there's a one-sheet handout that has the basic background on what's happened on the low-income heating assistance program. The program is federally funded, typically. Some states do supplement the federal funding, and they have, for example, Wisconsin has a state supplement. In Minnesota, we receive typically in December the first allocation from the federal government out of their appropriations. This year, we received $99 million. We then received a second allocation of $15 million in the middle of January, and that brought us to a total for this year of about $114.5 million. The dollars that we have and the impact or the demand that we've had has created, in essence, a shortfall in the funding that we have for the low-income heating assistance program. And how? Let me describe some of the factors that went into this. The first thing that we did at the Department of Commerce was we increased the crisis benefit for low-income heating assistance from $500 to $1,000. That's in addition to the standard benefit. So you typically get a standard benefit, and then if you're qualified for crisis benefit, you can get additional funding. It rapidly became clear to us that it wasn't enough to be able to help people. We had opened the hotline. We have to date about 3,400 people that have called us in desperate circumstances and fear. And trying to get propane and complain about the prices. So realizing that people who were just above the eligibility threshold, so the program. So typically the eligibility threshold is 50% of the state median income. People who earn just above that were in dire situations. So we increased the program parameter to the maximum allowed under the federal guidelines to 60% of the state median income. What that meant was, or what happens then, is we increased the number of households eligible for home heating assistance to 120,000 additional people. Not everyone's going to take it, so we estimated, based on historical data that we have, that 30 to 40,000 Minnesotans will take advantage of the expansion of the program. The third thing that we did was in response to concerns, complaints about running out, people were calling. They were at zero in their tanks heading into a sub-zero weekend. We expanded from 0 to 10%. So if you were at 10%, we instituted emergency triage measures to make sure that through the LIHEAP program and as well, if you didn't qualify for LIHEAP, we set up a hotline with the Propane Association to make sure that we would get propane to people who were totally out. And because of that, the third thing we did in the LIHEAP program was we increased the trigger level for crisis benefits from 20% to 30% of a tank fill. So you didn't have to wait till it dropped to 20%, you could get it at 30%, and that was critical for people who were waiting 10 days or waiting 5 days or whatever they were being told, so that we could then trigger and call the propane suppliers to get out and fill those tanks sooner rather than later. So those three efforts, those three changes to the program maxed out for the time what we were able to do to help the low-income heating assistance. So with that, however, if you take all this and historical data, our projections are indicating we're going to run out very soon. So let me just sort of give you the flavor of that. We have right now about 100, and these numbers are as of February 20th. It's on your sheet. 108,000 Minnesota households have been approved and receiving energy assistance. There's about 23,000 additional households who have submitted applications, are in the process of having them eligibility determined. So if those were all approved right today, we'd be out of money. And we want to make sure that we get the funding to be able not only to meet the emergency needs of people, but also to go to the typical end date of the program, which is May 31st. Last year, let me describe two factors on the horizon. The first is that we don't really know what the weather's going to be. It's a touch and go situation, and because of the because we could have continued cold weather or storms, we don't know and we can't predict. So it's very volatile numbers in our projections. The second thing that is important to keep in mind is that the cold weather rule expires on April 15th, and we experience increased demand right before the cold weather rule. So people realizing that they're not able to get assistance through the cold weather rule will contact the LIHEAP program to ask for additional funding. So we see a spike then as well. So where we stand today is that the program is in need of additional funds. We appreciate your consideration in doing all this. There are some other factors, but I know there may be some questions, and I can get to some of the other information as we proceed. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have questions for Senator Engelbrechtson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, thank you for that report. Can you tell me how long it takes a household family to receive these benefits? Can you run me through the mechanics of it?
Sure. From the time an individual or household calls, they typically will call one of the agencies. They can also call the Department of Commerce. They have to fill out an application. The application is processed by the CAP agencies or the service providers. That process, it'll vary. It'll vary depend upon the volume. In fact, because of the spike in demand, the process, meaning there's 23,000 applications today. There were many, many more weeks ago. These folks are working night and day, 24/7, trying to keep up with the number of applications. They're trying to do them as fast as possible. We have, to the extent we could, prioritized the application process. So in instances where people called us on the hotline and said, "We're totally out. We haven't applied even yet," we were able to facilitate the application process within a day and within hours to make sure that they were able to get the fills that they needed. So we expedited and prioritized those to make sure that there was absolutely no situation that we could that we wanted to hear about where people were out of propane and not able to get through the program.
So just to follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's good if it takes a day. I mean, that's good work. What I'm wondering is I'm hearing that they're not filling the tanks unless they have cash in hand or they're able to write a check. So do they So they get the approval. Do they have to – are there going to be some houses that are going to be shut down over that day and a half period?
So Mr. Chair and Senator, what will then happen is – there has to be a phone call made to the distributor, the jobber, to get the propane. And then you're basically – it'll depend on the situation of that propane person or the company. You're correct. Sometimes the companies were just doing minimum fills. Sometimes if you were on contract, you were being delayed. Sometimes if you had cash on hand, you were getting – your propane faster than anybody else. And what we did is we tried to stay on top of those delays and cut through to make sure that if we knew of a situation where somebody was 0 to 10%, that they, regardless of the circumstance, get at least propane in their tanks so that they could survive over the weekend or for a few days. It's been a touch-and-go situation. So from the time of an application to the time of a fill, there will be some lag.
Other questions? Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, thank you for being here. Thank you for bringing this forward, Senator Saxog. I see this as kind of a two-step approach. This is a short-term fix. What is being done long-term to work with the propane companies to make sure that that this situation doesn't happen next year and into the future?
Mr. Chair and Senator Miller, this gets into a very important conversation that I want to convey. The situation for the foreseeable future is not going to get better. It's going to get worse. For 2014, and the reason for that is is that the Kinder Morgan pipeline, the Cochin pipeline, is planning to do the complete reversal in April. The Cochin pipeline coming down from Canada delivers approximately 40% of the state's supply of propane, and that's for agriculture, it's for households, and all of that. And when we when the administration heard about this issue being such and it not being really taken into account, and the propane industry not responding to it, that was what prompted the December 5th meeting the governor had with the propane industry and all the stakeholders. So all the ag community, the railroads, the truckers, low-income heating assistance folks, and then there was a second meeting the governor had at the end of January. One focused mainly on this, but then also concerns about the future. It's hard to describe without giving you just sort of the basics. 40% of the state supply of propane is obviously a significant amount, and if it if we have just similar circumstances from what happened this year, this is just going to exacerbate it. So it's an imperative that we keep an eye on this situation. I have the numbers here. 40% of Minnesota's supply is approximately somewhere between, depending upon the year, but in a high demand year like this year, well over 200 million gallons of propane. It's a significant amount. And in order to solve that, we've got to figure out a way to get that Canadian propane to Minnesota on alternate routes, either off of the pipeline through railroads or through trucks, or it has to come up from the south. And there's only one pipeline source from the south through Conway, Kansas, and then there's a terminal down in Mont Belvieu, Texas. And then as we experienced this year, those pipelines weren't delivering the supply that we needed from the south, which is why we had to have the emergency actions to send trucks down to Texas. The governor called the governor of Texas to Texas has a law, a rule that says you only Texas trucks can pick up propane. So Governor Perry suspended that. The point is that we're going to need to find alternative ways, and those conversations are happening, and folks, legislators, you will hear about that. We've had those conversations, everything from increasing storage capacity on farms, on homes, railroad capacities, prioritizing propane rail cars, all kinds of ways in which we can figure out a way to get more propane to Minnesota. So those are the things that are on the table, but it's a long-winded answer, but I just want to make sure people understand that the propane situation is not going to get better. It'll be a difficult situation.
Well, and Commissioner, I would assume if you have significant problems with the delivery system, the other part of it is if this winter becomes more the norm in terms of subsequent winters, that would also exacerbate what's going on, because the need would be that much greater, even separate from the delivery system.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I mean, we've had, this is the, in the last 30 or 33 years, the coldest winter we've had, and it's been unpredictable. you know, in essence, this is it's an emergency. It's like a flood, a tornado. It's like, and we should be planning for worst-case scenarios.
Senator Bonneville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I have a few questions just to fully understand what's happening here. You mentioned the export situation. So my first question is, could you share who exactly is exporting? Is that the Canadian company? Is it the companies in Texas? And is there any effort underway at the federal level to put some parameters around their ability to export when the demand isn't met domestically?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonneville, it's the propane petroleum companies that have – it's a propane is a byproduct of the development of petroleum products. And it's those companies that felt or found that they could make more money exporting than they could in the United States pricing. So – most of that goes exported out of Mount Bellevue, Texas, and it's those companies that were exporting the propane. In response to this action, the governor the congressional delegation called on the president, wrote letters, and asked the administration to take every means possible to stop the exporting. It's on our sheet. The specific date was right around the end of January 20. I can't remember the specific
date. Yes, I read that. I just wondered, though, what did the president do?
So then there were phone calls. I was on phone call with the White House. The steps that can be taken depend upon whether it's a national emergency or not, in part. And one very important action that did happen was the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission issued an emergency order that directed Enterprise, one of the major pipelines, to prioritize shipments from Mount Bellevue to the Conway so that those supplies could get batched up here to Minnesota. And as over the last two or three weeks, we've received incremental shipments of 500,000 barrels. In the last 2 weeks, we received an additional 1 million barrels that allowed us to ease the supply, you know, get additional supply. Prior to that, the pipeline system terminals were on allocation, meaning they were, holding back on supply and conserving it. Once that supply was turned around and came back up, then they took the system off allocation. It eased the need to send our trucks down to Texas. They could go to Kansas, and then some of Enterprise's supply gets delivered at Pine Bend here. Not Flint Hills, but there's a terminal that's separate that they deliver here. So those actions, you know, we believe that the governor took with others to call on the administration precipitated. In fact, the governor did, I should mention this as well, he called two pipeline companies themselves, talked to their CEOs and said, you know, this is a supply problem and we're in dire circumstances. So you could see that right away there was some response to that.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Commissioner, the other two questions. One is with regard to our proximity to the oil in North Dakota. Does that not give us any benefit? And then the other, and if, I see you shaking your head, and why not? And then the other thing is, what happened with the Canadian company that now has you predict, you know, a prolonged inability to get their propane?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonneville, the Bakken oil situation is counterintuitive, but the reason is that the high demand for oil, the production of oil, has done a few things. Number one, It's put a lot of oil tankers, cars on the railroads that made it very difficult to switch and shift propane tanks to address the situation. So, and then the weather itself, if, when you talk to the railroad industry, it made it very difficult. There isn't a supply really of propane coming out of Bakken that is an answer necessarily to our supply shortfall. So it comes from Canada and the South, at least currently. The second reason is that because of the oil that the Kinder Morgan company made the decision to not ship propane on its pipeline, because they're going to reverse the flow of the Cochin. So instead of it coming down, it's going to go up, and they're going to deliver what's called diluent, or it's a distillate to be used by the oil industry to, in essence, make it easier for it to ship the oil. It'll be, and it's not as thick, basically. So they're going to use the pipeline for that rather than propane. Mm-hmm. So that's been that'll be the impact.
Thank you,
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I want to echo Senator Miller's sentiments. This is great work and much appreciated, and will help a lot of folks in crisis, and so the efforts of yourself and the governor, everyone, is greatly appreciated. But, we obviously can't repeat this every year. It's just not sustainable. And, part of the problem is, of course, that, folks who use propane are totally exposed to this confluence of circumstances in the marketplace as it operates. It's a little different than how we treat some other sectors of our elements of our energy sector. So I did ask this question of Deputy Commissioner Grant. How do we start systemically to address this problem? Folks who use propane are kind of far away from being connected to other forms of energy. Yet they're totally exposed. They're living in virtually a monopoly environment, dependent on propane for their energy and heating needs. He did talk about starting to talk to some of the utilities, especially the natural gas utilities, to see where pipe could be laid, so at least they have some leverage or some ability to use something different in the marketplace. We don't necessarily have to answer this question now unless you have a little bit of a start of an answer, but that's what I'm starting to wonder. This is not sustainable, yet people are exposed to monopoly circumstances, and I can imagine these factors, or at least two or three of these seven factors, would reoccur. And then you talked about the pipeline, so we know we're heading for a longer-term problem.
Mr. Chair, Senator, these are very important questions, Senator Dibble. What I've said to my staff is it's all hands on deck. We need to find every tool possible to figure out a way to alleviate the supply and the demand, so it's both supply and demand side. On the specifically to your question about switching folks off, I've started conversations, and Deputy Commissioner Grant has moved along those lines to open the ability of gas companies to build out and extend. It's the extensions to homes. And that's through the tariff process and the Public Utilities Commission. So those conversations have already started. there's been receptivity to that. I think I don't want to list them all out, but at the same time, CHS, for example, is increasing its supply and storage capacity of propane, and they've stepped up and are planning to do all kinds of things. There'll be talk about needing incentives to build storage capacity on farms and at homes. There's conversations about ways in which we can purchase? It came up in committee yesterday. How can we encourage people to purchase and contract in the summer months when the prices are low? What are the possibilities of that? You will see that, I think, in response to the energy crisis. People will fill up the summer on prepaid contracts to the extent that they can. So we'll have so it'll be all of that. And I think there's – and I had a conversation even last night with a company here in Minnesota that on the petroleum side to encourage people to look at this as not only a serious issue but an opportunity for them to fill in and get some more propane to Minnesota. So on the supply side, I think it's, again, all hands on deck. And then on the demand side, we have to look into issues with respect to, what people are using in terms of their heat source. Is it natural gas? Is it propane and alternative sources? And then incentivize people to ease up on the propane use and to the extent they can.
Mr. Chair. Thanks, Commissioner. An idea that had occurred to me was either as a state or working in conjunction with other states or maybe at the federal level, is it at all feasible to create some sort of public emergency reserve that could be on hand to mitigate against these kinds of circumstances? Yeah.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, the answer is yes. I testified in front of the Senate Energy Subcommittee, Senator Franken's committee, 2 weeks ago. Talked about the propane situation and had conversations with Senator Franken about that possibility. It's most likely, I mean, it's a cost item, and it's there are a lot of issues with creating a public capacity to have a reserve, but I think it's an imperative question to look into. So to the quick answer, and then we can get you more information, we have identified the best model to be the Northeast Home Heating Oil Reserve. It was created off of the National Strategic Petroleum Reserve Program that's run by the Department of Energy. That was done for the Northeast for home heating oil, and similarly, some model like that could be done. And on Friday, I've got a phone call with NASIO's executive director, the State Energy Office Association, to look at best practices and modeling to be able to present a really strong proposal on something like that.
Thank you.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. Commissioner, I've heard recently about some of the companies that people have contracted with during the summer and prepaid for their propane, and now what those companies are doing is charging them large amounts for delivery, which hasn't happened in the past. Is that legal under our current law that they can suddenly, without notice, a previous notice or part of the contract, just start charging them large delivery fees?
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, this is one example of many issues that we were called about on the propane hotline. We had 3,400 calls. Of the 3,400, half were to get assistance, to get financial assistance because they were out or needed to get connected. The other half were about complaints about price, about delay, and about fees. And in response, I sent a letter, first an appreciation of the propane industry for stepping forward and helping with the assistance, but also to reemphasize that the governor instructed, and I would be carefully watching the marketplace for price in these issues. So we've collected a lot of information about those kinds of practices. It did happen. Low-income heating assistance people were charged additional fees. Others were too. And we've had conversations with folks, the propane marketers and suppliers, about that problem. So the bottom line to answer your question is that it's inappropriate to discriminate it against a low-income heating assistance beneficiary. It's a straight law on that. And so, you know, if you've got a complaint or if you've got any issue, we want to know about it so we can stop it.
Well, Senator Goodman.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I'm still not sure, is that an illegal practice for them if it's not in the contract?
In my view, if it's not in the contract and if it's not being charged to somebody out, and just because you're on low-income heating assistance, you're being charged something, that would be an inappropriate practice.
I don't, Mr. Chair, I don't necessarily think it just pertains to low income. I think it's people that have just prepaid for their propane in the summer to get a cheaper rate, and then now that the prices have gone up, they're adding amounts to that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gubin, I would look at it as an inappropriate practice.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll make one other comment, and that's that up in my neck of the woods, up in central, north central Minnesota, where generally we don't, there's large areas where there isn't even a natural gas line coming in. And consequently, when this happens, there's a, you know, there's just no way to get the propane in the way we should. So, working in the long term on and getting more access to natural gas in certain areas of the state, I think would be helpful in the long run too.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, first of all, I want to thank the administration for acting. I sent a letter immediately to Governor Dayton and actually responded back, and I was getting a lot of calls in my area. So I really appreciate that. I'm wondering, in your discussions with the supplier, current supplier that's now going to be reversing and sending a substance north, have they talked about now with, of course, the demand situation with this trend, this colder trend that we're now experiencing over the last couple of years and probably next year, any talk of running a line next to that and bringing propane back down again? I mean, we're talking about, if it's Benson, Minnesota, we're talking at the most 350 miles into our country, running it side by side or something like that. Was there any discussion about that at all? That would certainly help our demand.
Mr. Chair, Senator, there not to my knowledge, Senator. No one's mentioned it to me, and, in fact, you'd be the first one to have spoken it.
Senator Limerick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Commissioner,
makes sense.
I've noticed that natural gas has been going up in price over recent years, isn't it? And oftentimes it's crunching individuals' budgets as well as the propane cost. Is it simply because there's an adequate supply of natural gas that we don't run into the same crisis? I know we have the ability, if you fit into a correct financial status, you can still heat your home even though you cannot afford to make the bill payment. I know that the issue of that same type of program for propane has been offered in the past, but somehow it mysteriously just disappears off the legislative agenda from year to year. And would that be an option for us to consider?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not sure I understand which option.
Well, let's address the option of the if you're in a low income, you can't afford your natural gas bill during the winter season, you can still get the supply of natural gas you need. Why don't we do that with propane?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, this is the cold weather rule, and under the cold weather rule, if you're on natural gas or electricity, you're eligible for the cold weather rule, which allows you to call your utility, set up a payment plan, and then get your supply regardless of your situation. Propane is not in that program.
And why not?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, I think it's something that people are considering. It's something that should be considered. And I do, from what I understand, it's been an historical debate as to whether propane should be part of that program or not. And I would encourage that discussion.
Mr. Chair, I might suggest it's been a historical blockade by the industry. And you know, maybe we can wind it up again, see where we go.
Okay. A couple of other things. I don't know if there are other questions, but if we can just discuss for a minute, I know there might be a couple of amendments, but relative to the figure requested in Senator Saxhog, I know you and I talked last week about the $20 million figure, and then I had not seen at that point the letter from the governor to the four caucus leaders where he had specified a figure of $17 million. And so, and we've got that letter, I guess, in our packet where he makes reference that he'll include $17 million in my supplemental budget proposal. So the number I'm hearing is, at least in terms of a need right now, is $17 million. Commissioner, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, no, that's not correct. The number is 20. I can explain.
Okay.
In essence, I believe the letter you're looking at is February 4th.
Right.
And our numbers are, we generate projections 2-3 times a week in determining the demand and the amount of money needed to sustain the program. Since then, the demand has increased, and it's incrementally increasing practically every day. So our current projections are at the $20 million as a conservative figure to get us through May 31st, which is why I believe there was communication recently from the governor and governor's office to say that's why the $20 million.
Okay. I'm a little bit confused because I've not seen the correspondence from the governor's office relative to that, and I had not received a call. All I've seen is, and I know when Senator Saxhog and I talked last week, there was some question about, you know, we had talked about the 20 figure. That was just I won't say an offhand conversation we had, but I didn't have anything in front of me. So I'm a little bit confused as to why, at least this, you know, we've got the handout from the agency where it says $20 million additional funding, but I haven't seen anything in terms of the projections or the details that the department has. You know, one thing certainly is that if we find ourselves in a situation where the problem continues, and let's say whether it be $15 million or $20 million or $25 million, is not adequate, I mean, we're in session. You know, we can take care of that in a matter of a couple of days or a few days. If it looks like an appropriated figure is running short. And so I'm not sure why we wouldn't be able to do that. I can appreciate if, let's say, this was October and we had a pending crisis and we're going into the winter months and we're not going to be back in session until end of February, then obviously we wouldn't be in a position to do anything without another special session. But in this case, we're here. So if you come back to us in a month and suggest that, or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, that we're running short again, we can turn things around pretty quickly. I mean, does that make any sense? Or that's normally how we've handled things around here in the past.
Mr. Chair, I certainly appreciate your question and looking at this. As of today, the program needs $20 million based on the demand. And again, as I indicated, if we approve all of these applicants currently in the pipe, the process right now, we'd run out of money today. The expectation is that we predict that we're going to run out of money, you know, if we don't get the funding. And that those numbers and the data that we have are showing that we need it as early as March 1. And our concern is that we want to make sure that the program doesn't run out of money even, you know, as we proceed into March. And so we want to be respectful of the legislature's timing, but we also want to make sure that the urgency of the situation with all of the people that have applied for the assistance, could apply for the assistance, are getting the assistance as soon as they can get the assistance. I'd add one other thing. For every let's say, $1 million, it's a back of the envelope type of calculation, but that's about 4,000 people. And
18% increase.
You know, it's certainly one of the things, at least from my perspective and in administering the program, that we try to help as many people as quickly as possible under the circumstances.
Yeah. And Commissioner, I was just informed, and there are a couple things. This is illustrative of where the legislative process gets to be a little bit awkward, number one. Number two, you certainly as an attorney can also appreciate this is why hearsay is inadmissible. Apparently, I don't know when you talked to the governor the last about this, but apparently the governor talked to Senator Bach on Monday and said $17 million was the figure. Now, I wasn't part of that conversation. I'm guessing you weren't part of that conversation. Senator Bach's not here. The governor's not here. So that's hence my hearsay comment. But apparently that's what the discussion was on Monday when I think at the very least, I'm not sure, but I think Senator Bach and Speaker Thiessen met for quite a while with the governor. And the governor told Senator Bach that $17 million was adequate. Now, again, I wasn't there. So if I've mischaracterized what the governor said, I apologize. But so I don't know if he said it was adequate or it's adequate up to the present date. Or I can include it in my supplemental budget, an additional amount if needed, you know, something like that. I don't know what qualifications there were. But he did tell Senator Bach $17 million was the number.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Am I correct in saying that the House passed a bill yesterday? Do we know the amount that the House passed?
Well, I think that, Senator Miller, I think the House, the House files is what we're working from. So that's what they passed.
What was the amount?
It was $20 million. To be absolutely fair, this is just a general comment. I guess I can go around the table. Let's see. I can count former House members, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right, so we all know we don't defer to the House. Senator Miller, I realize you don't have House experience, so you know that might be, you know, you might have a different perspective, but the eight of us know that we don't defer to the House. Commissioner.
I just want to be straightforward and clear. I'm in contact with the governor's office many times a day and all day yesterday and day before, and the number is $20 million. Based on the information I have, I don't know that about that conversation. There hasn't been any conversation other than the $20 million that the administration knows about, at least from the staff perspective. And I do know that that's what the number is from the administration.
Sir Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the letter from Governor Dayton, and I'm just reading the second paragraph. It says, we begin the winter with a lower-than-usual inventory of propane. I am wondering what is the normal level that we have for propane in the state, and why was it lower than usual this past year? Because we had a bad winter last year also.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the inventory is the national inventory. The inventory is kept not in Minnesota, but in salt mines in Kansas, and in other places throughout Texas and the lower part. And it's those inventories, they keep the propane in salt mines. And so what we learned was that because of the exporting and the high demand because of the polar vortex throughout the Northeast and the Midwest, that it drew down those inventories to very low levels, actually dangerously low levels, to the point where the propane was going to be tainted and it wouldn't be a good enough supply. So it was drawn way down, and that was the figure I mentioned earlier, that we were at about a 60% capacity of the typical inventory over the last 5 years. So we're still in a touch-and-go situation in terms of the total inventory and supply for the country.
Is others? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, it appears that the governor issued an executive order expanding this program in three different ways. My question is, are those executive orders permanent, or is it only for purposes of this bill and this emergency allocation?
Mr. Chair and Senator, it was in response to the emergency that the administration took those steps. It's only planned to stay in effect temporarily till the end of this program year. But we will keep in mind what's necessary for next year. In particular, the one that we'll several of them that we'll have to keep in mind is the number of people that are eligible. So the 50 to 60% of the program. We did that in response to the emergency. It's typically not done. Other states have higher figures and percentages, but we'll take a look at it, and it all depends on how much funding we have.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Commissioner, but the bottom line is that those executive orders will expire with this bill and this emergency allocation. They're not permanent. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, they're not hinged on this bill necessarily, but they're hinged. They were actions taken to change the program for this year, which ends on May 31st.
Thank you. Sir Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, and if I repeat a question that's been talked about, I can talk to you offline, but talk to us about the pipeline that's still not down, but it's going down in April, and what can we do to try to ensure better supply strategically in our state versus having to go to Texas or Kansas to get this propane supply? Because, or can we promote other pipelines that need to be coming in if we're taking a pipeline down? Or is that an issue you've already discussed? If so, I can talk to you offline.
Commissioner, Mr. Chair, and Senator Westrom. In response to a few questions, we have talked about that, and I'm happy to talk with you offline. But the answer is it's an all-hands-on-deck approach. We're going to lose 40% of our supply of propane because of the Cochin pipeline being shut down or reversed by Kinder Morgan. And there needs to be alternative distribution and storage capacity in Benson and a few other places, as you know. And I think I'm happy to talk to you about the things that we've talked about, but yeah, okay. there are things that have to be done to be able to supplement that supply shortfall. Or the situation, it just will exacerbate the situation. It does exacerbate the situation for the end of 2014, and particularly the harvest and agricultural areas.
And Mr. Chair, Commissioner, I mean, it seems like we could have a storm worse next year than this year. Once that pipeline's down, we've never went through a whole winter. So that's good to hear, and I hope whatever we can do as a state to help promote or, you know, further storage in our state seems like a first step. But I'd be happy to talk to you offline about that and would like to. Thank you.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I want to go back to my question before about the delivery issue. Does the department have the authority to stop that, to tell the distributors that they can't charge for delivery when the contract has been in place or prepaid propane? The reason I'm asking is because I think that really has to stop. And it's big amounts from what I've heard that they're doing. And if you don't have the authority, or if the governor doesn't have it through executive order, I would consider doing a bill to stop that. But I want to know if you already have that authority.
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, I'm happy to have that conversation as well as other steps that can be done. The Department of Commerce Commissioner does not have the specific authority to prohibit that. We have authority to stop discrimination in LIHEAP, which gets to some of that. There is the Deceptive Practices Statute, which is the consumer 325E consumer protection, but that's not specific. So I'm happy to have a conversation about those issues.
Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion or amendments? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for you. And maybe you've already said this. If you have, I apologize for missing it. But what part of the budget does this come from? Is it the rainy day or is it the kind of an inappropriate word, I suppose, for cold weather?
No, I mean, it,
just so the committee knows.
It would come from the supplemental. Well, we don't have a supplemental budget yet. But we do have projected reserves. Yeah. It would come from that. And it's appropriated from the general fund at the bottom line.
Okay. Thanks.
Any amendments? Senator Laurie.
Mr. Chair, I've got the A1 amendment.
Okay, do we have the amendment distributed? I guess almost. Senator Laurie.
Mr. Chair, this was, I believe, Senator Pappas's amendment, and she was missing. If she wishes to describe it, she sure can, but it's fairly straightforward, a requirement that no more than 5% of this appropriation can be used for administration of the program and assuring that 95% of it would go to the consumers that are struggling to pay their heat bills in this extraordinary circumstance. I believe Senator Saxog is aware of this.
Senator Saxog?
Well. I knew it was coming.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I thank you, Senator Laurie, since I was out of the room.
Okay, so we've got the Laurie-Pappas or Pappas-Laurie amendment. I'm not sure which, but Senator Saxog?
Well, I was aware of the amendments coming. I think I'd probably take it as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Further discussion on the amendment? If not,
just a question, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, in your current program, what is the percentage that is spent on administrative expense?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, it's 10%. And let me describe to you the program. It typically, a program like this, while other programs run at a 15 or 20% percentage, this is at 10%, so it's relatively lean. 8% of the administrative costs are actually paid to the local service providers, so the CAP agencies, Lutheran Social Services. 10% is for our staffing to be able to administer the, or 2%, sorry, is to administer the program. And
he's telling us it's 10.
And the reason for the those costs are really to pay the staffing. The local service providers need the staffing to be able to process the applications in this the high demand for all of this. You know, my sense, if I can just speak to the amendment, is that and we've actually increased the amount of money, administrative money, under the emergency situation to provide additional funding to the CAP agencies, Lutheran Social Services, to be able to staff up to get the process and the applications done fast enough under the emergency circumstances to get people the home heating assistance that they need. and that the process times for the applications are expedited as soon as possible. I did have a conversation with the board of directors of all of them. Many of them expressed that they were hammered, especially at the Arrowhead region and some others, because they have low staff numbers. So any relief they could get for administering the program was critical. So
I think this is federal funds.
I understand the rationale for this, but at the same time, it's necessary to maintain the administration of the program to deliver the services.
Commissioner, let me ask, I was just given the fuel assistance language. Apparently, there's already statutory language. Apparently, I've got it in front of me that says no more than 10% may be used the first 2 years of the program, and for any subsequent year, only 5% may be used. Now, apparently, as I read the language, that affects only the federal account, but it uses a figure of 5%. So, is there a reason why we couldn't do 5% for all the monies? How do you distinguish the federal use of the federal monies, which is already at 5% in state statute, as opposed to doing the totality of the program at 5% for at least the supplemental money?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the statute in front of me. I just know the program's run at 10%.
So we have that given to the. And Commissioner, this will be really easy. It was highlighted for me in orange. So it's
easier for you attorneys to be able to.
It's highlighted in orange, yeah.
Right. Attorneys need that.
Exactly. And the commissioner as an attorney is aware of that as well, that if it's highlighted in orange.
I know. That's,
we get confused by some of the other primary colors, but.
Orange is good.
do you have the section?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. And I just conferred with the director of the LIHEAP program. Typically, this clause doesn't come into play, and the reason is that the funds are brought in and spent within the first 2 years. There's never a carryover, so it doesn't impact us.
Okay. All right, we have Senator Laurie, Senator Pappas's amendment in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. I have one other suggestion, and just relative to our debate in terms of the amount, I don't know that we're going to resolve that right now. I do think there's a little bit of confusion in terms of figures we've been hearing. I'd like to suggest to the committee, since I raised the question and referenced conversations with the governor that I was not a participant of, that I'd suggest maybe we pursue the file as it is right now. With the $20 million figure, if we find that there is some other figure established by the administration, and that would I'll define that as a combination of the governor and the commissioner, then we could always change that fairly easily on the floor. The only other thing I've noticed in the bill is, and this is a question of language construction, we're on line 112. It says the funding provided in this section is intended to supplement. Why would we want the future tense? Isn't that shall supplement? Senator Miller, make note of this. This is another thing with the House and the Senate that is there anybody in this committee who would appreciate this? Maybe Senator Pappas, but my predecessor, Senator Miriam, spent a good part of his chairmanship
correcting
making
grammar.
Sure that our bills were properly constructed.
Mr. Chair, I probably wasn't even born at that point. So,
Mr. Chairman, I thought that was Senator Frederickson's job.
Senator Pappas is correct. It was Senator Frederickson and Senator Miriam, but it was a combination of the two. Senator Miller, we'll check on what exact years we're talking about.
Yeah.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I nominate Senator Miller to pick up where Senator Frederickson left off and delete all appearances of the word such.
Yeah.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I'd take that as a friendly amendment. Substituting shall.
Okay, Senator Saxa moves to
delete as intended to and substitute shall. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?